Chapter 22. The Ritual of the March. 9,000 dwarves marched in unison, quick-stepping, trotting, their lines bending and swerving to move through dell and over ridges. They seemed more a force of nature, a living flood, than an army, and so they were. Dwarf priests had been spaced evenly around the massive force, and they led the song, and indeed it was more than a song. Brunner led it all, reaching back into his memories of the throne of the dwarf gods, which served as a conduit to an ancient dwarven ritual long forgotten, the ritual of the march. Dumathoin's whispers brought the words to his lips, and his throaty voice carried them along. Every dwarf sang, 9,000 voices giving cadence to 18,000 boots. They rumbled and they rambled, the ground shaking beneath their stomping footfalls, and they did not tire. That was the magic, an enchantment that reached into the core of the hearty folk and pulled from them the best they could give. They rolled over the miles south of Fourth Peak and along the southern ridge of Keeper's Dale, and just beyond that valley they caught the fleeing orcs' encampment, the one group besieging Mithril Hall that had not joined in at the Battle of the Cerbrin Bridge. 9,000 dwarves, armed and armored with the finest mithril and adamantine culled from the mines of 3 dwarven citadels, led by and fighting for 4 dwarf kings, supported by 300 elf archers, and with Drizdo Erden and Catti Bree among them, bore down on the orcs. Outnumbered by more than 5 to 1, caught by surprise at how quickly the vast force had traveled from the Cerbrin, the Many Arrows encampment had no heart for the fight and broke ranks even as the battle began, fleeing every which way but mostly back to the north. Drizzt and Sinifane's elves dogged them every step, shooting them dead, but the dwarves did not. On Brunner's call, they reversed course to execute their next hop, and they sang and marched all the way back to the river, then across the bridge to the eastern lands of the Cold Vale and the forces encircling Citadel Felbar. They knew where all of the enemy concentrations were settled in great detail. The dragons and their riders had mapped it all before the march started, and now many elf scouts and Catti Bree's divination guided Brunner and his peers. No army, surely not one of short-legged dwarves, had moved with such speed and precision in the memory of men or elves, or orcs. "I am more winded than you," Drizzt said to Brunner on one of the rare breaks. "I'll need Andahar to pace your forces." "Sing like a dwarf elf," Brunner quipped. "Bwahaha! He ain't got the pipes for it," Bungalow Thump said from nearby, where he sat with General Dagnabbit and King Conorad. Drizzt laughed at the good-natured ribbing. "Nor can I understand a word you're saying," he replied, and all the dwarves laughed. 50 miles and a fight afore supper," Brunner said. And Drizzt knew that to be one of the lines of the enchanting song, and an accurate one. "I'm knowing why Moradin telled me to come back," Brunner said quietly, so that only Drizzt and Catti Bree could hear.
"Mialiki, you mean," said Drizzt.
"Was Moradin what used her?" Brunner disagreed. "Oh, aye, but I was to do her favor and save your own skinny bum. But was more than that. I'm knowing that now. I seen it. And see it still in me thoughts. Dumathoin's whispering to me. Clangadin's giving strength to me arm."
He paused and lifted one arm in a flex that accentuated his defined and knotted bicep.
"And Moradin," he said somberly. "Aye, Moradin. He's cheering, don't ye doubt. Was Grumsh that sent Obuld them decades ago, and now it's Moradin who's putting the dogs back where they belong."
"We'll sweep the Cold Vale," Drizzt said.
"Aye, all the lands from the Red Run to Adbar'll be free of any large bands in just a few days. And then?" "Back across the Cerbrin," said Brunner grimly. And he was looking more to the northwest and the southwest, where lay the Cerbrin Bridge.
Drizzt knew where Brunner's mind was leading his gaze, knew what was up there. The dwarves held a huge advantage. They didn't have to worry about leaving their flanks or the citadels in their wake vulnerable. For even if Hartusk turned the whole of his vast southern army around, he'd never catch them. Nor could he break into Mithril Hall or Citadel Felbar or Citadel Adbar.
The ritual of the march, the Drow Ranger said, nodding.
The Whisper of Dumathoin,
Brunner replied with a wink. 50 miles in a fight afore supper, Catty Bree sang in her best dwarven brogue. A good thing it is that Regis isn't here.
Summer was on now in the Silver Marches, but up on the northern slopes of Fourth Peak, Dumweel was anything but warm. Low clouds gathered, threatening to dump bone-chilling sleet upon her yet again, and without shelter she would have been wise to turn around and quickly descend from the snow line. But she could not. Cassidea would not let her. Her breath puffed out visibly in front of her as she trudged along, and often did her feet skid out from under her, leaving her wet and miserable in the melting snowpack, and more than once terrifying her with the thought that she would create an avalanche all around her. But she did not, and when she came around one rocky jut, her goal was at last in sight. There in front of her lay the torn and broken form of Orbengross. The dragon as red with its own blood as white now, and in a pond of red snow and mud. She tried to give that messy ground a wide berth, but only until she saw the smaller form in front of it. Then she was running straight through the muck, slipping and falling, but pulling herself up and scrabbling along and yelling, "Father!" with every step. She got to the broken form of Tosin and desperately tried to touch him. But the breath of Orbengross had fallen over him fully, and the ice was thick around the corpse. Scratching futilely until her fingers bled, Dumweel finally fell back to a sitting position, gasping for breath, battling her tears. She had known that Tosin was dead, of course. The sword had told her, and had even shown her the manner of his death. But now that she was sitting here in front of the body, it became real to her, and so did the dire implications. She couldn't go back to Menzo Baranzon. She couldn't return to her mother and her clan. She had nowhere to go and no hope of getting there. A jolt of pain stabbed at her like a lightning bolt, and she sucked in her breath and blew away her tears and her dismay and looked down at the source, at her sentient sword.
"We will find the course," Cassidea promised her, reminding her again of the plan it had revealed to her. "You will be welcomed in the city of the Spider Queen," the sword telepathically promised. "You will do what the son of House Baenri cannot. You will shame him, and so you will be held above him."
Dumweel nodded, trusting the blade. From the sword, she knew the way to acceptance, but knew too the way to vengeance. The journey to the Silver Marches had been a long march for most of the Cusor Lauren Drow, and so it would be a long march home again, they knew. House Orlaren, who ruled the new city, was known for its arcane magic users, but aside from Ravel, who had already gone back to Menzo Baranzon with Gromf Baenri, and Sabrak, who remained at Matron Mother Xerath's side in the fledgling city, few were adept enough to cast a teleport spell. So they were doomed to walk, or ride their spectral mounts, or summon discs, a journey they expected would take a month at least. And every day they remained with Warlord Hartusk's army meant an added 2 days to their absence from home. The orcs were marching almost directly south now, away from the cave that would take the remaining 80 drow warriors and wizards back to Cusor Lauren. If the battle at the Rauven River, where a dozen of their kin had been slain, hadn't convinced them to give up this useless war, then surely the departure of the Menzo Berenir drow and the White Dragons had.
"Do we tell them or simply leave?"
the drow wizard Mephizo Valentarn asked his associates with the silent and intricate hand-code of the Dark Elves.
"The ugly orc warlord will not be pleased," an old Zorlauren warrior named Epricante signed back. "He is only now getting word of the disaster at Mithril Hall."
The band of half a dozen drow leaders glanced over at Hartusk's main tent, and could see from the shadows cast by the fire within that the burly orc was clearly agitated, up and pacing around briskly. They had marched long into the dark night, through the Moon Pass, and were now almost directly east of Everlund, though with still 100 marching miles to go. The nether mountains loomed over them, directly north, yet another barrier placed between the dark elves and the cavern that would take them to the underdark tunnels that led home.
"And word of the dragons," another offered, and the six nodded. "The whispers from the north hint that Orbingross might well be destroyed."
"Gather all," Mephizo ordered. "Let us be long from this place before the warlord even knows we have deserted his cause."
Mephizo looked to the east, where far away the dim light of the moon could be seen under the eastern edge of Sabrak's roiling darkening.
"When the moon's light is stolen by Sabrak's enchantment," he said to his co-conspirators.
The others nodded again and scattered, moving around the clusters of marching monsters to locate the other drow and inform them of the decision and the impending departure. An hour later, they began filtering out singly or in small groups, moving past the campfires of goblins and orcs and other monsters, making their way back to the Moon Pass and Sundabar beyond. They might have made it through the last lines and into the clear, except for another shadow that appeared in Warlord Hartusk's tent.
"They leave," said the intruder, who had come in all of a sudden, materializing from nowhere.
The orcs scrambled and fell all over each other, trying to fashion some response, but the drow stood impervious. When one of Hartusk's guards hurled a spear at him, he didn't move, and when the spear hit him, it simply bounced away.
"Your dragons are gone, Hartusk," the drow said. "My people of Menzo Baranzon have been deceived, and you have been deceived by the traitors of Cusor Lauren."
A group of orcs closed ranks in front of the warlord, brandishing spears and swords as if they would leap forward and attack, but Hartusk held them back.
"Who are you?"
he demanded.
"A messenger from Duke Tiago," the drow replied.
"Whose minions have already fled,"
Hartusk said with a growl, and the orcs in front of him brandished their weapons threateningly.
"Because we were deceived," the drow retorted, "by the dark elves of Cusor Lauren."
"Who remained to fight?" growled Hartusk.
The drow smiled at him and shook his head.
"No, Warlord Hartusk. They brought you out here so far from your keep and with long lines of supplies to see you dead, and now they leave."
With that, the drow shrugged and stepped away, simply disappearing, but not before he reached out to the orc who had thrown the spear at him. A simple gesture of his fingers, and that orc flew backward, a wound opening in its chest that replicated the wound his own thrown spear would have made. And the drow was gone.
The orcs leaped around, expecting him to reappear, but Hartusk slapped them and shouted them to order.
"Go and see!"
he roared.
"I do so hate the stupid ugly things," Gamoriel said to Gromf when he returned to the Archmage in a cave far north of the marching orc army and Hartusk's tent.
"They will serve their purpose," the Archmage replied evenly.
Gamoriel nodded, knowing that many Cusor Lauren drow would likely die this day. The losses would shame the fledgling city and would place Matron Mother Xerath in a very uncomfortable position indeed, so much so that she would inevitably look to Matron Mother Quenthal for support. And so this grand expedition to the Silver Marches would once again benefit House Baenri. Kimoriel wasn't surprised by any of that, of course. He had suspected from the beginning that Quenthal's coaxing of soldiers and wizards from Cusor Lauren, even enlisting Sabrak to enact the Darkening, when surely the powerful Gromf would have better sufficed, had been done for exactly this reason. Cusor Lauren was never intended to be independent of Menzo Baranzon after all, and Matron Mother Xerath could not be allowed autonomy from House Baenri. A few score dead males were nothing to Matron Mother Quenthal, but to Matron Mother Xerath, with far fewer resources and fighting to secure Cusor Lauren in inhospitable lands, and especially after the damage Xerath's city had already suffered at the hands of Drizzt and his friends, such a blow could prove painful indeed. Such a blow might tempt other Menzo Berenir houses, Malarn or Hunsrin likely, to wonder if perhaps the new city was not as sanctioned and blessed by Lady Lolth as they had been led to believe. It was no secret that Matron Mother Shakti Hunsrin had quietly built up a trade coalition of her own among several of the lesser houses, and that she had not been pleased by the bold move of House Orlarin to establish a sister city in the Upper Dark to facilitate trade with the surface. Kimoriel stared at the Archmage and wished it was time for another of Gromp's lessons in psionics. Perhaps he could slip into Gromp's mind then and unravel the mystery of this one, who seemed to be working every faction against one another. Gromp knew of Jarlaxle's interference, but had not intervened or hindered the mercenary at all. And yet, in sending Kimoriel to visit Hartusk, Gromp was clearly working in the best interests of Matron Mother Quenthal. But why? Dark elves could move very swiftly, even more so when they could conjure spectral steeds and other magical mounts. But they could not outdistance the relay of calls that cascaded from Warlord Hartusk's camp, back to the north and east, from orc to goblin to ogre to giant. And so the first battle of Warlord Hartusk's march to Everlund was not against the city's walls, nor against a line of Brightlance's knights in silver or any other raiding band. At the trailing end of his vast army, the word spread that a drow head was worth 100 pieces of gold and a wagon of slaves. Fireballs and lightning bolts from drow wizards soon ripped and brightened the night, and fine drow weapons spun and struck and covered the field with a blood of goblin kin and giant kind. But 100 giant-hurled boulders went up into the sky amidst a swarm of orc arrows and spears, and the sheer press of the monstrous forces overwhelmed the forces of Cus Orlarin. Some escaped, fleeing into the darkness, but many did not. Just as Gromp had planned it.